The road to the MLB All-Star Game presented by MasterCard starts with you. Who will take the field this July? The power is in your hands. Phase one of the 2026 Konami eBaseball MLB All-Star ballot is open. Vote up to five times daily for your favorite stars. And get a bonus daily vote by downloading the Konami eBaseball MLB Pro Spirit game. Top vote getters advance for the chance to be a starter. Cast your ballots at MLB.com/vote. MLB trademarks used with permission.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
America faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Insane Themes Podcast, where we wrap up the week that was only the things we've never seen before. We'll start with insane thing number four. You know, something was up this week when The Atlantic went with an article on how FBI Director Kash Patel was drunk all the time. Incommunicado, locks himself in his apartment or office, no one can reach him, everyone's very concerned. Yeah, Kash Patel has, by the end of the week, filed a $250 million libel lawsuit, and it turned out that story had been shopped all over the place for a long time, and even the lying mainstream media wouldn't touch it. This was an act of desperation to discredit Kash Patel. But why? By midweek, we'd see why. The Democrats knew what was coming with the Southern Poverty Law Center.
The SPLC purports to fight white supremacy and racial hatred by reporting on extremist groups and conducting research to inform law enforcement groups with the goal of dismantling these groups.
It turned out that the Southern Poverty Law Center had been funding the Ku Klux Klan, the United Klans of America, Unite the Right, the National Socialist Movement, that one doesn't surprise me, Aryan Nations Affiliated Sadistic Souls Motorcycle Club, and the American Nazi Party. But the most shocking part was that it was actually the Southern Poverty Law Center who did the funding and some of the racist posts for Charlottesville, which, remember, they blamed Trump for. And the blame at the time was very tenuous. The name of the rally was Unite the Right. They use that to say, well, oh, look, see these white supremacists here, they're all on the right. So that must be Trump's fault and Trump's a racist. Now we find out that they were not only making hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of payments to the organizer of that event and overseeing racist posts around that event, but they were also funding the transportation of the racists to the event. Folks, if we did a thing like this, think of one of our organizations, I don't know, Heritage Foundation, something big that's associated with us, paid actual Nazis, we would never live it down. I mean, they would bring it up in every single interview. See, we told you you were Nazis. You even fund Nazis. But not a single member of Democrat leadership condemned this one iota, which is incredible when you consider that those paid protesters who were transported in by the Southern Poverty Law Center participated in a riot at Charlottesville that killed three people. Democrats have been blaming Donald Trump for that for a very long time. Well, this disclosure raises a lot of questions. Number one, how did the Southern Poverty Law Center become the single largest funder of anti-Semitic and racist hate in America under the watchful eye of Christopher Wray, who multiple times under oath testified before Congress that the number one terror threat to America was no longer Islamic, but was from right-wing racists and extremists? Did he know those supposed groups, which he reoriented the FBI to spy on, were being funded by the Democrats through the Southern Poverty Law Center? I have so many questions. The Democrats quickly jumped in and said, no, they were just infiltrating these groups. No, they weren't. And I'll tell you how I know that. I covered state and federal court for a lot of years as a reporter. I saw a lot of infiltration and informant operations, including paid ones. They never pay the top guy in the group. They never pay the organizers. They pay people underneath them so they can prosecute the heads of these groups. And yet they were paying the top people, like the head of the American Nazi Party, who, by the way, before that was the head of the Aryan Nation. When you do that, when you pay those people, what does it do? Well, they think, wow, I'm making all of this money. I don't even have to work anymore. I better keep up the hate. I better recruit harder. I better expand or I'm not going to get the money. I mean, who are they going to turn on? The people underneath them? That doesn't even make sense. Folks, here's the crazy part about this whole thing. Democrats are claiming, of course, that we're actually trying to protect these groups. It's Democrats who are trying to stop them. And this whole prosecution is just political. Okay, who started it? Where did it start? Where did it come from? The banks. In America, by law, banks are required to maintain certain algorithms that detect fraud. That very algorithm software alerted fraud alerted on the Southern Poverty Law Center. Well, by law, banks have to inform federal prosecutors of that. They have to inform the Treasury of that, and they did. It was totally not political. And it's not surprising that they alerted, given that Southern Poverty Law Center made fake shell corporations and gave fake information for who controlled these bank accounts in order to move the money through. That's what triggered the fraud software. So the idea this is a political prosecution, no. What is political is the fact that when the Biden administration got these warnings about felony level fraud from, you know, from the banks, from Southern Poverty Law Center, Southern Poverty Law Center was deeply embedded already inside the FBI and inside the Department of Justice under Biden, helping to persecute and prosecute all kinds of right-wing groups. You want to talk about political with this investigation? Yeah, that was the part where the Biden administration ignored the felony fraud alerts that came from the banks, stopped the case in its tracks, and allowed Southern Poverty Law Center to continue its reign of terror. We don't yet know who the person was who organized the Charlottesville rally, who was paid by Southern Poverty Law Center. But I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction. I'm going to predict it was Jason Kessler, the primary organizer and permit holder for the 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. Why? This guy was a longtime Democrat street activist. He was one of the coordinators for the Occupy Wall Street activism and a longtime supporter of Barack Obama. Longtime Democrat, when suddenly, conveniently, in January of 2017, he discovered that actually he was a right winger instead and a racist. What happened in January of 2017 again? Oh, that's right. Trump was sworn in. What do you want to bet this is the guy they were paying? In other words, another week, another Democrat hoax unravels. I mean, is this going to happen every week? Last week, we found out Trump's entire impeachment was fake, concocted by the deep state and members of Congress, complete with a fake whistleblower. This week, we find out Charlottesville was fake. And never forget how they used it. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say Charlottesville was fake. The three dead people were very real. But never forget how they used it.
I ran for president in 2020 because of what I saw in Charlottesville in August of 2017. Extremists coming out of the woods, carrying torches, their veins bulging from their necks, carrying Nazi swastikas, and chanting the same exact anti-Semitic bile that was heard in Germany in the early 30s. Neo-Nazis, white supremacists, the Ku Klux Klan, so emboldened by a president then in the White House that they saw as an ally.
Neo-Nazis, white supremacists, the Ku Klux Klan, all funded by the Southern Poverty Law Center, Dyum. Which leads us to the clip of the week. I'm going to go ahead and front load that in today's podcast. This from Charlie Kirk, right around the time in May of 2025 that he and his organization, TPUSA, were added to the hate watch list. Ironically, right next to the head of the American Nazi Party, they were paying $70,000 to.
They're literally putting high school chapters of ours on a hate group next to the KKK and next to neo-Nazi groups. And I mean, we can laugh this off. There's an element to this. Remember that there was a shooter that went to the Family Research Council ago, inspired by the SPLC list. This is them trying to make us basically surrender at Turning Point USA. We're going to do the opposite.
Sadly, he'd be dead 4 months later. 4 months after his listing by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a hate group. Again, it was Charlie Kirk and his organization. Listen to what Kirk wrote at the time. Again, it was prophetic. Their game plan? Scare financial institutions into debanking us, pressure schools to cancel us, and demonetize us so some unhinged lunatic feels justified in targeting us, which is exactly what happened to Charlie Kirk. Remember, he writes the Family Research Council, an SPLC-inspired gunman went after them. They loved nothing more than to see TPUSA in the crosshairs, which is exactly where they'd be 4 months later. Folks, can you imagine if we did a thing like this to the left and someone we listed ended up shot dead by one of us? I mean, folks, I can't imagine, but it never would happen because the difference between us and them is we're not stone cold evil. They are. Folks, remember, this isn't just about manufacturing fake hate to drive people to the polls because there wasn't really any or even a way to raise money off fake hate. This was the justification that the Treasury Department used to intimidate banks into turning over our purchases, to debank us as racist haters. Before they were done, the banks, including my bank, would turn over millions of transactions to the Biden Treasury, including purchases of religious texts, purchases of everything from bumper stickers to t-shirts that were negative toward Kamala Harris and Joe Biden or positive toward Trump. There was a whole list, including any kind of ammo, gun supplies. If you shopped at a gun-oriented store, it was turned over. I, like you, bought a Bible and gun supplies during that period. I'm probably still on a list somewhere. All of it justified by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Folks, I thought I would just play this really quickly. Some of their victims, both donors and actual victims. This is Moms for America. As mainline a conservative group as you can get, but definitely not racist.
Because they listed us as a hate group on their hate list, and it's been consistent for the last 5 years. We've been deplatformed from social media. We've been denied services from everything from insurance to... payment platforms, even Vimeo for video storage. And every single one of them have identified the reason as us being on the Southern Poverty Law Center saying they won't work with hate groups.
Diamond Dynasty has all new Red Diamond cards and World Baseball Classic content in MLB The Show 26. Collect your favorites and compete against the best. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time, or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Insane thing number three.
Your intelligence source tells Fox News that Iran is trying to wait out the United States, betting markets and energy prices will put pressure on President Trump and force a deal.
And who's doing their best to help Iran hang on? Democrat Senator John Fetterman admits it's the Democrats, saying, "I'm the only Democrat left in Congress who supports epic fury." That's incredible.
The real danger is Iran and its proxies too. Iran must be so excited by the American media and the Democratic parties the way they, it's like, as long as we can hang on for 60 days.
Actually admitting they're trying to help Iran hang on. Folks, remember, this is after Iran fired two long-range missiles at one of our joint bases with the UK. Our soldiers were on Diego Garcia, and they're rooting for Iran. The propaganda got so absurd this week, Bret Baier couldn't believe it. Here's Democrat leader Hakeem Jeffries claiming that Iran has been made stronger by this war.
Iran's in a stronger position now than it was before Donald Trump started his reckless war of choice.
The House minority leader to say that Iran is in a better position today than it was before the war started is just seems so disconnected.
It's so disconnected, and I can't really figure out what he's doing. I mean, the partisanship at this point has gone off the charts. You could be confused if you're listening to Hakeem Jeffries about whether he's a spokesperson for the Supreme Leader of Iran or a spokesperson for the Democratic Party in the House of Representatives.
But you know what they're really terrified of? This is working, and it's going to be a fabulous success at the end. Maybe not without some bumps for Donald Trump, but also for the Middle East and the world. And it terrifies them because the signs that that is true are there every day. Take Max Boot, for instance, columnist with the Washington Post, who's been trashing Trump as a ignoramus for weeks for starting this war, actually having to come out and hedge his bets that Trump may actually accomplish good things here. Why? He hopes to have a tiny shred of credibility left at the end of this.
It's possible that Trump could actually achieve something with his blockade if he doesn't get too ambitious.
That was actually spoken on MS Now because they all know it's true. Folks, hundreds of years of world history shows one thing. Whoever's currency is the primary trade currency for the planet Earth is the world's lone superpower. And you can see the ascendancy of the United States of America as the world's lone superpower pretty much from the minute the British pound stopped being what everyone traded goods in. Well, is anybody paying attention to what's happening as the seized Venezuelan oil is sold on the world market for dollars? As China is now forced to buy oil, the only place left it can buy oil from the world market for dollars? And as all those ships that Iran's mines have scared away from the Strait of Hormuz are rerouted to America to buy natural gas and oil, is anybody paying attention to what's happening? For the first time in years, the share of global transactions in the dollar is increasing and rapidly. In February 2026, 49.2% of the world's transactions were in dollars. By March, it had gone up a full point. That's the highest it's been since before the pandemic and before the Biden presidency. Meanwhile, I had a laugh today watching Fox News. They're breaking news. The third aircraft carrier arrived in the Middle East, they reported. If you listen to my show or this podcast, you would have known that a week ago, that we now have the largest buildup in the Middle East we've had in decades. Starting around April 13th, we've been surging massive military assets to the Gulf area, way beyond even what we have there. And folks have been watching it online on satellite, so have I. But they reported breaking news. Oh, wow, look, a third aircraft carrier slides into the Middle East. Folks, three aircraft carriers, it's been decades since we've had three aircraft carriers in the Middle East. That's the size, scale, and scope of this conflict, and probably gives you a good idea that Trump is getting ready for a beatdown. No way he stops at this point. He cannot leave them Karg Island and the Channel Islands, what I call the Toll Islands, or China will simply just take the Strait of Hormuz over again. And yes, I said China, not Iran. Folks, to give you an idea of how close on the razor's edge we were to having China control major trade routes and then through violence and proxies dictate economic policy, an amazing stat I found in an article this week. On February 24th, Reuters reported that Iran and China were close to finalizing a deal for Chinese-made supersonic anti-ship cruise missiles, weapons capable of threatening the American carriers, the three of them now massing in the Persian Gulf. Wait, what was the day they announced they were close to finalizing that deal for that purchase? February 24th. What day do we hit Iran? February 28th. We had to move. That, as we learned this week, that it was China doing the satellite targeting of our bases. You know, the bases Iran hit and killed our troops? The seven troops who were dead in those missile strikes? Let that sink in. China did the targeting. China was arming Iran. And what have I been telling you for weeks? The second Trump appeared to step back from the Strait of Hormuz, China and Iran jumped in and began cutting deals with at least eight countries. You can have safe passage, but you have to buy and sell energy in Chinese currency. It showed their hand. I get that a lot of listeners are isolationists. I generally am too. If you've listened to me for a long time, you know that. But folks, I mean, I got a question for you. How are we going to sell stuff to the world if we can't ship it around the world without China's permission, because we came damn close to that. I mean, when Trump and Rubio wrested control of the Panama Canal back for America, Chinese companies that had taken control of it were already talking about extra high fees for American ships to get through. You know where that was going. Well, realize what's just happened in the last couple of weeks. And this is what has Democrats terrified, because they see the level of success here. They just won't acknowledge it. I want to read this paragraph to you. It was from an article that came out, Roger Kimball, on Monday. On Saturday, the U.S. signed a defense agreement with Morocco concerning the Strait of Gibraltar, the choke point between the Atlantic Ocean and the Mediterranean Sea. Just a few days ago, the U.S. inked an agreement with Indonesia, granting expanded operational access over the Strait of Malacca, through which nearly 80% of China's oil imports flow. Last year, Trump negotiated the neutrality of the Panama Canal, sidelining Chinese companies that quietly stepped in to manage the access to the canal under Joe Biden's watch. Gibraltar, Malacca, Hormuz, Panama. In just over a year, President Trump's opened the world's major choke points under the aegis of American oversight. So you can go all, you know, libertarian, founders wanted us to be isolated, but understand the price of that. China rules the world. China controls the seas through violence. And there is no trade with the outside world, unless China says so. And in that world, there's no trade in dollars because China says so. In that world, they take our printing press, which, look, I don't want the thing. But when you got $40 trillion in debt, this would be Great Depression conditions. Again, implemented through violence. It simply can't stand. But again, I wanted to point out to you the first real significant increase in trade in dollars and all-time high hit since before the pandemic in trade in American dollars. This is working. You can see it. And what we get at the end is not us imposing our will on the world. It's us imposing freedom on the world, which just happens to also be profitable for us, as it should be. Why? Because dollars flow to power. And the choice before us is what power those dollars flow toward. Chinese totalitarianism or American freedom, free shipping lanes with no tolls imposed, no piracy, and no economic policy by China enforced at the point of a gun. That's where we are, folks. We had no choice. And we were about 4 days, well, I would say just like weeks away from China having the missiles in Iran's hands that it would need to take out our carriers. Let me walk you through how that ends, because what was the thing that we've seen them do? Again, fire that missile, nuclear capable ballistic missile at Diego Garcia. They would do it. They will do it because they did do it. We know that. And so what was the plan? Do nothing, get all libertarian, sit around at the coffee house, talk about how smart you are. And then what? Our base gets blown away. Our troops get killed. We can't move our goods through world waters. And then we wait to show up to do something about Iran when it's nuclear armed. And we're greeted with a supersonic missile that takes out one of those three carriers that's in the Strait of Hormuz, that's headed toward the Persian Gulf. Yeah. Yeah. That's the future those people want. Well, we'll just wait till Iran's dangerous. You can't do anything once Iran's dangerous. And yet Democrats beg them to hold on. If you want to know why Iran's still holding out, here's Exhibit A. I'll just play a little of it. Hakeem Jeffries, this week, leader of the Democrats in the House.
Yeah, Pete Hegseth is a complete and total disgrace at this point. And the mismanagement at the Department of Defense is extraordinary. In the middle of a conflict that, by all accounts, in the Middle East is not going well for the United States of America. Billions of dollars are being spent to drop bombs on Iran. The regime is still intact. We have not decimated their nuclear stockpile to the extent that it exists.
But couldn't we just try to be their friends? That's been the Democrat strategy. Want to end this Iran segment with this because it's really noteworthy. Over the weekend, when it looked like the Strait of Hormuz would open, the Eurowinis and a coalition of 38 other countries stepped in and said they would take over patrolling the Strait now that it was safe, and that the only two countries that would be excluded from this multinational coalition would be America and Israel. Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister of the UK, also stipulated that there would be no more blockades of any kind in the Strait. Well, the only kind of blockade there is at all right now is ours. I mean, Iran's dropped some mines, but they don't have anything blockaded. They don't have a navy. So Keir Starmer's basically saying, hey, all 40 of our countries will come together and demand the end to the American blockade. Oh, by the way, guess who would be partnering with them to control the Strait of Hormuz? Who'd be consulting with them? They wouldn't actually have ships out there, but they would be consulting. Iran. So let me get this straight. Iran is going to consult and we're going to leave? Yeah, that's what they announced over the weekend. So kind of sounds like France and the UK are sort of allies of Iran, right? Pretty much. How did Iran repay them for that? It was less than 72 hours. Iran's gunboats, they've got little gunboats out there, open fire on two UK ships. Not our ships. They wouldn't dare. Their ships. That's what they get for announcing that Iran will partner with them, consult with them to patrol the Strait of Hormuz, and America will leave under the, you know, this new, very moral multinational coalition. The whole purpose of it was to add moral authority. Hey, look at the number of countries we have to the idea that America has to leave because the Euroweenies voted on it or something. Again, look how Iran treated them. And you know what is incredible? That the UK would do that just weeks after Iran fired two long-range missiles at their Diego Garcia base. That's incredible. But what it shows you is if you try to be their friend, they just lob more missiles at you. I doubt our European friends will learn a thing from this episode.
Introducing the all-new MLB Plus, your ticket to streaming baseball's best. Let's go! Enjoy MLB Network 24/7 with live out-of-market games and award-winning shows. Enhanced game nights with MLB Big Inning, live and commercial-free. And hear live home and away radio broadcasts of every game, blackout-free. Even stream minor league games all season. It's all here and it's all new. Get MLB Plus for just $59.99 a year. Visit MLB.com/MLB Plus.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Insane thing number two. We're now up to 12 dead or missing scientists, all of whom worked on some aspect of nuclear propulsion, either associated with the Los Alamos lab, NASA, or military contractors. These stories are shockingly bizarre. I'll just add one to the top of the pile. It broke this week. Even though it happened back in July of 2025, people are beginning to put this together. A NASA nuclear scientist by the name of Joshua LeBlanc went missing, didn't show up for work on Monday. That never happened. His family immediately panicked. They say their last contact with him was actually Tuesday morning at 4:32 a.m. They didn't say what that contact was. It's not public. But the Huntsville, Alabama police immediately began searching for him. And that's how they were able to determine that his Tesla had been parked at an airport for 4 hours. They later in the day, by about 2:45, were able to track that Tesla from the airport. And folks, this is a guy who's never even been late for work. They were able to track that Tesla from the airport 12 miles away to the side of the highway where it had caught fire and he had burned beyond recognition. Long before that, the day before, his family had reported him missing. Now, here's the weird part. They reported him not just missing, but abducted because of the condition of his apartment. Now, there's no public records as to what that was. But I want to focus on just one aspect of these cases. When was the last time you left your home without your cell phone or without your cell phone and your wallet? For me, never. I'll be late to where I'm going and I'll turn around and get it. I don't do that. Now, it's possible that, say, one of the 12 did it before they disappeared. I could see that happening. Other people are not like me. But there's a weird pattern here of these people leaving behind at least their cell phone and often their wallet. Of the 12, 5 did exactly that, and potentially 6. Monica Risa, to me, one of the most interesting of the cases. It's not clear if she did or did not have her phone with her when she vanished while hiking with companions. They literally turned around and waved to her. She was 30 feet behind them. She smiled and waved back. They turned and walked forward for a little bit, turned back. She was gone. They haven't found her since. Like LeBlanc, who I just profiled, She was working on propulsion. What does this leave the cell phone behind situation tell us? One of these people who did that was a janitor at this facility who had a pretty high security clearance. Well, they all would have had very high security clearances, and they all would have had handlers because of it. Handlers who, when you go to meet them, would have told you what? Don't bring your cell phone. These people, if they left on their own accord, clearly would have left without a cell phone after being instructed to do so. That's just too high of a number of people doing that. Why would you leave your cell phone behind? Because clearly your handler didn't want you being tracked to wherever you were meeting this person that you trusted. So who would this be then? Either someone from the company that you work for, the military contractor, or from the government, or maybe an entity with both. Someone you trusted. That's why you would go, and that's why you would leave your cell phone behind. Or perhaps this is a foreign power who's spoofing, being that contact, that person that they all trusted, and getting them to leave their cell phones behind. Either way, it's very clear when they left, they weren't to be tracked. Or there's only one other physical possibility, if you think about it, for this high a level of coincidence in them leaving their cell phone behind. And by the way, one of them, Melissa Cassius, a Los Alamos National Laboratory Administrative Assistant with the security clearance, she not only left it behind, both her cell phones were wiped. Factory reset. Before she was last seen on a highway camera wandering around, then ultimately disappeared. Folks, the only other reason that would happen is these people are not voluntarily leaving their homes. They're being abducted. And the abductors, of course, don't take their cell phones. And the reason I think that might actually be what happened here is when you look at the case of Joshua LeBlanc that I just told you about before, the story, the official story is that he left his home, of course, without the cell phone. But the family, remember, when they originally called, they reported him as a not just missing person, but abducted person because there were signs, they said, of abduction at his apartment, again, where his cell phone was left behind. So perhaps that's why they're leaving their cell phones behind. Whoever is taking them is making sure they don't have it on them because they don't want it tracked. Because you track that cell phone, all you got to do is start pulling video from the route the cell phone traveled and you got whoever's doing this. So it's a key part of this. And to me, it says this is more than coincidence. Insane thing number one. Get familiar with this term, micro-looting. What is that? It's shoplifting. And it's a good thing. For months, the Washington Post, the New York Times have been doing articles suggesting that it's now social justice to steal. A good idea, really. Just the latest installment of that. From the New York Times headline, "The rich don't play by the rules, so why should I?" Why petty theft might be the new political protest. In a shocking version of the New York Times' own podcast, they actually published this. A guy by the name of Hassan Piker, I'll get to him in a minute, one of their editors and a writer for the New Yorker, all sat around and talked about how cool it is to commit crime. So folks, this is the Democrats coming out and actually admitting this. That this is where they're going. And it makes sense. I mean, this is the party of fraud. This is the party that allowed $500 million to be stolen over 10 years in Minnesota. This is the party that is responsible largely for the fraud in California. This is the party that is not only refusing to prosecute that fraud because Democrat voters are committing it, but that just filed a bill to prosecute the journalist that keeps reporting it, the Nick Shirley Act, which is an incredible read if you could pick it up, filed by the Attorney General of California's wife, who's a legislator. It's $10,000 per post online of Nick Shirley or whoever confronting immigrant groups. If you confront immigrant groups in particular about fraud and theft of federal dollars, that is an arrestable offense. You can do jail time for it. We used to call this reporting. Well, they're trying to pass it while refusing to prosecute the fraud. So you know what? It makes perfect sense. If Democrat voters or perceived Democrat voter groups are allowed to defraud the American people, and it's all just very normal, then regular people, it's only fair that regular people, regular Democrat taxpayers, be able to rob places blind. They're not joking about this. This is where they're going. Here's from the podcast.
I think it's cool. We gotta get back to cool crimes like that. Like, you know, bank robberies, right? Stealing priceless artifacts, things of that nature. I feel like that's way cooler than the 7,000th new cryptocurrency scheme that people are engaging in.
That's Hassan Piker. And it's absolutely insane that the New York Post actually published this podcast. But Hassan Piker is not just some podcaster. He's the hottest thing going in the Democrat Party. He joined Zohran Mamdani at multiple campaign stops. And in a sign of just how hot this guy is, he campaigned last week with Abdul El Sayed. He is the lead Michigan U.S. Senate candidate on the Democrat side. Again, the guy who is endorsed by Governor Gretchen Whitmer, one of the leading lights now of the Democrat Party, campaigned with this guy. Now, here's where this gets shocking, okay? After the campaign stops were announced, there was a minor, you know, controversy over it, and it was pointed out to Abdul El Sayed, the candidate, hey, you know Hassan Piker has called for the murder of Trump supporters and capitalists, right?
People that they can afford housing in Berkeley? I don't know how that works.
My understanding is that the property owners who have properties there choose just not to rent it at all.
Yeah, kill them. Kill those mother and murder those mother in the street. Let the streets soak in their red capitalist bloods, dude.
Yeah, that's pretty clear where he's going with that. He's a member of the Democrat Socialists of America, much like Bernie Sanders, AOC, Zohran Mamdani, who, by the way, after campaigning with him, Barack Obama last weekend actually appeared with Zohran Mamdani. So they're all getting increasingly comfortable with this. But anyway, Democrat candidate Abdul El Sayed, it was pointed out to him that Hassan Piker has called for the murder of people who oppose Democrats. And he was cool with it. He said, you know, diversity, we appreciate diversity of opinions in the Democrat Party. Not a single person in Democrat leadership has condemned this, which is really, really shocking. And now the New York Times is normalizing it, all of it. The crime he's calling on Democrats to commit, and also the murder. Folks, there's so many aspects of this that are so shocking. On that same podcast, so you have the New York Times editor, and they're sitting down, the three of them, with Gia Tolentino. She is a reporter for The New Yorker, and she confesses that she microloots all the time, but only at places like Whole Foods because those are corporations. And she's laughing and giggling. You could tell she thinks he's really hot. I'm serious. I think she'd go on a date with him. And she's bragging about everything that she's stolen. Okay, can you imagine doing that where you work? There'd be an awkward silence. And in the, you know, weeks, months after that, your bosses would be finding a way to push you out the door. The bosses at the New York Times thought this was great and published it, which, folks, shows you the psychologically ill, antisocial social culture inside places like the New York Times, inside the liberal halls of fame. This is nuts that they published it. I'll publish just some of the crosstalk here. And this is, again, Hassan Piker, this woman, and the New York Times editor just casually sitting around deciding what crimes are okay now for Democrats to commit. But folks, okay, if you're a Republican, no crimes are okay to commit. In fact, they'll come up with fake crimes to put you in prison for 700 years like they did with Donald Trump. Just listen to the crosstalk here.
Yeah, no, I'm pro piracy all the way. Like across the board, would you pirate a car? Yes. You know, if you could, if one could pirate a car, it was just a classic thing back in the day. The government funded anti-piracy initiatives would be like, dude, would you steal a car?
Oh,
like, yeah, sure. If I could get away with it, if it was as easy as, pirating IP, I would do it.
Yeah. Would you dine and dash from your local diner?
Never. Never. Tip 35%. Mike's, come on.
No, I wouldn't do that. And if I saw somebody doing that, I'd probably pay for their meal.
Yeah. Would you steal a book from the library?
Never.
No.
Would you steal from the Louvre?
Yes.
Would I cheer on every news story of people that I see doing it? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's cool. We gotta get back to cool crimes like that. Like, you know, bank robberies, right? Stealing priceless artifacts, things of that nature. I feel like that's way cooler than the 7,000th new cryptocurrency scheme that people are engaging in.
What is that you're hearing right there? It's a new moral system Democrats are adopting. And this is why you see them really coming out and refusing, basically publicly, to prosecute fraud if it's done by the right people. Crime is okay as long as the right people are doing it to the wrong people. That's the moral system that they're laying out there. And of course, the right people are, well, Democrats, and the wrong people, well, everybody else. Now, you're probably thinking, wow, this system taken to its logical conclusion. And folks, again, what you just heard there is classic Marxism. This system taken to its logical conclusion, wow, they'd be killing people, wouldn't they? Well, you think they'd wait a few months before they get to that, but no, they're the left and they're in hyperdrive right now. As Hassan Piker laid out what this murder of the wrong people by the right people would look like. Remember this word too, because you're going to hear it a lot in the coming years. I mean, in addition to micro looting, which for the rest of us is shoplifting, you're going to hear this a lot. Social murder. It's not a new term. It was actually coined by the co-founder of Marxism with Karl Marx, a guy by the name of Engels. His theory was that the middle class and up through capitalism did harm or something to the lower classes, sometimes resulting in death or something. And so any kind of murder of the middle and upper class is therefore justified. That exact philosophy was responsible for the murder of over 100 million people in the last century. And Hassan Piker is a self-described Maoist. That exact philosophy was used in China to justify the murder of over 50 million. In fact, famously, what they would do was, and I've told you this before, they would label every single member under Maoism, the started of Chinese society, they'd put them in one of 10 classes, 5 oppressor classes and 5 oppressed classes. If you were in an oppressed class, you could commit virtually any crime against a member of an oppressor class. And to demonstrate this, the Chinese Communist Party members would call up members of the oppressed classes to the stage in these forced gatherings, and then they'd call up oppressor class members and beat them to death to demonstrate right there on the stage that there would be no criminal prosecution if you were the right person and you were doing this to the wrong person. This is what they're doing low-key on this podcast, folks. But back to social murder. Want to hear Piker justify that as he lionizes and all but praises Luigi Mangione and how inspirational his murder was of that United Healthcare CEO?
Engels wrote about the concept of social murder. And Brian Thompson, as the United Healthcare CEO, was engaging in a tremendous amount of social murder, the systematized forms of violence, the structural violence of poverty, the for-profit paywalled system of healthcare in this country. And the consequences of that are tremendous amounts of pain, tremendous amounts of violence, tremendous amounts of deaths. And that was a fascinating story for me because Americans are very draconian about crime and punishment. They're very black and white on this issue. And yet, because of the pervasive pain that the private healthcare system had created for the average American, I saw so many people immediately understand why this death had taken place.
As he's justifying this murder, I'm watching it right now, the New York Times editor is sitting there with the biggest smile on her face. This actually passed muster with them. It's their podcast, the New York Times podcast, not her podcast, and they published it. When they tell you who they are and what they're going to do to you, believe them. We are not taking these people seriously enough. Again, if he was just some podcaster, I'd say, nah, some nut job. But this guy is the leading light right now of the Democrat Party. These candidates are campaigning with him. What's horrifying is Democrat leadership won't condemn this. And I want to read you what, real quick to close the podcast, what Ro Khanna, Representative Ro Khanna, Democrat out of California, had to say about this. You've probably seen him on TV a lot. This is, again, a guy calling for murder on his own podcast. We are the party, talking about the Democrats, of redemption, believing you deserve a second chance if you make a mistake as a young person or deserve to make a life if you came here undocumented but work hard and play by the rules. Nobody's even talking about undocumented people. And again, Hassan Piker was not a young person. He said it last year about the murder. And the social murder, that was this week. Anyway, Ro Khanna writes, yet when it comes to political disagreements, we have taken a very different attitude. If someone held political viewpoints we disagree with or said sensational or hurtful things, we feel vindication of moral certitude in our condemnation. Perhaps we could learn from the great philosopher Ted Lasso, be curious, not judgmental. I'd like my party to lead in redeeming America to live up to our promise. Don't be judgmental about micro-looting and murder. That's where we are, folks. I'll attach that jaw-dropping tweet to the sources section. Have a great weekend.
Battleground America with Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.
Diamond Dynasty has all new Red Diamond cards and World Baseball Classic content in MLB The Show 26. Collect your favorites and compete against the best. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.